Well, good morning. This has been something that I know I myself and most of these other men, I'm sure, have been anxiously waiting to get to be a part of this morning and talk about this as a workshop. Can't you tell? We're down here in the middle. This means I may not ask you anything, but you're going to feel like I did anyway. That's how we're going to proceed the best we can. This series talking about preaching Christ. Make sure I hit my buttons and all in the right order. When we think about that, Houston. Okay. Pull it out and plug it back in.
Well, I guess we'll let it.
When we think about what any of us are going to be involved with in preaching Christ, I'll tell you right now, my lesson is going to step on other people's outlines. I haven't done a lot of looking at the other outlines. But when we're talking about preaching Christ, whether it be to any topic, there's something in here to work with. When we talk about a workshop, you know, you think about a workshop, hey, that's where you put things together. That's where you do it yourself. And in that sense, that's what we want everybody to do. I think I can speak for all of the speakers. That's what we're here to do. We're not here to be experts. You had a lot of other people you could invite if you want experts. But we want to be motivated, and we want to stimulate anyone else to be motivated. There will always be people that we will have opportunity to talk to. That's how we see things unfold in the Scriptures, and that's what eventually here we're going to look at, is that they took the opportunities they had. Sometimes that's going to be where I'm like, okay, I'm going to gear up to talk to somebody of a multicultural audience, or I'm going to gear up to talk to somebody from a denominational world, or from the institutional brother, or I'm going to talk to somebody that doesn't believe in God at all. Well, if you have a plan, that's real good, but that may not be the next person that you get to talk to. So any of these lessons, there will be something for all of us to look at. And for the most part, what we see is there is a desire to teach other people. Teaching the gospel did not present itself to begin with. And Paul talks so much about how he didn't come with expert testimony, but what he had was desire. That's perfect. Thank you. Romans chapter 1. So often we turn to verse 16 and focus on it. But look at what he says right before that. So much as is in me, I am ready to preach the gospel to you who are in Rome also. And, of course, verse 16 is the focus. He says, for I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it's the power of God for salvation for everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. One of the things that we so often hesitate with is that I don't know enough. I don't have the ability to convince somebody. And I'm right if I say that. The power is in the gospel. Sooner or later, regardless of who it is that we are talking to, what audience it is, what contact, which kitchen table it might be, we have to get around to preaching the gospel. And sometimes that is received, and sometimes it is not. But our job is to be the seed sowers. Not necessarily the winners of debates. Paul didn't win every debate that he was a part of. Stirred up a lot of hornet's nests. But the desire was to preach the gospel. Those who were willing to hear that were the ones he was looking for. And that's the ones we're looking for. So I thank you, and I'm humbled by the invitation to come and talk for a little while. This first section is on preaching Christ to atheists. And I typed in coexist bumper sticker to get this picture. All of us have driven up behind this car. It's usually a Subaru, but anyway, this one's different. And there's a world of things going on in that picture. One of the things probably that might be hard to see, but right here at the top, this is one that says you don't need God to hope, to care, to love, to live. Livingwithoutreligion.org. You want to find a segment of people that are all over the map, but the one thing that they don't want is what you have to offer. This might be it. However, show of hands. How many people know somebody that considers themselves an atheist? Most everybody. This is a group that is not as devout as you might think, and yet, on the other hand, there are part of them that are extremely devout. When we look at this preaching Christ to atheists, we focus on the goal. It is to preach Christ. Sooner or later, we try to get around to that very thing. And we often question, where do we start? One thing I want to just put out to everybody, if there is one of these topics where you can say, oh, well, that's the background that I came from. I was converted from a denominational background, or I, at one time, was an atheist. There is a sense of a powerful opportunity, an advantage, a head start that you have on so many others. The Apostle Paul talked about in Romans chapter 10 about his heart's desire and prayer for Israel is that they might be saved. And you think about where did he go to start with? But to the synagogue, to the people that he had something in common with, that he could say, this is where I came from. That's powerful. That's the first place to start. And if there are things in these lessons that where you can say, yeah, that's where I came from, that's such a powerful opportunity to use ahead of time. It's not the only opportunity, but it is one coupled with that desire that can be far more effective than you think. Well, I think, where do we start? It's real easy to say, well, this, if somebody's an atheist, it's like, oh, well, I don't know where to go there. And it's very easy to hesitate. I think Satan puts so many things in our way that hesitation is probably one of our worst things. And it's very easy to say, I suppose it won't work. Really, when we're talking about anybody, and again, some of the very generic things, is we start with these folks where we would start with anyone. With a sense of humility, compassion, patience, and a concern for their soul. Now that means, put this in here too. Look at this, in the context of the Apostle Paul saying that it became all things to all men, not that he became a sinner to see sinners, but became all things to all men. Literally, the idea is to get down on their level in some way to relate to them, to talk to them. Verse 22, he says, to the weak I became as weak that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men that I might by all means save some. And you see that attitude that's there. He's going to sow the seed that he might save some. He's not going to curl up in a fetal position because he didn't save them all. Part of that seed taking root is somebody else's obligation. But if they have never heard the gospel of Christ, that opportunity is what the Apostle Paul was trying his best to provide at every chance. And the idea was, you got to try. And that's where we're going with all of these. Now, I just put this slide back up here. I thought it wise not to put this up here the whole time because I'd be looking at the slide trying to figure out who's what. It's like, where would you start with that guy, lady, whoever. Where would you start with them? Would you say, oh, you got a lot of bumper stickers there? You know, I tell you where I would start. Think about Jesus at the well, with the woman at the well, John chapter 4. What was the first thing he said? You're rotten Samaritan, you don't know what you're doing? No. Just give me a drink. He's at the well. There's something in common that he needs. That's a conversation starter. That begins, you know, and it's a civil conversation, which is surprising to her. And that is what segues into becoming spiritual. I think what I would do, I'd say, where did you get this Star Trek symbol? Like, you can't see it, but there's like a Darwin fish up in here and a few others. But it's like, where did you get that Star Trek one? I say, you know, Sherry and I, we used to stand at opening night in these great big long lines with folks with Spock ears on and all, looking around at all those early movies. And we're going, look at all these geeks out here. What can you imagine? And we're standing right in the middle of the line, opening night. Kind of made you laugh. It's disarming to just have something in common with somebody. Of all the things that I do not have in common with this, what represents on this car, find something and say hi. And then maybe I would say, so I've seen this coexist bumper sticker on something. Which one of those are you? What's all that mean? Because most of those want to kill you or don't want to have anything to do with the other one. I'm confused. In fact, you can look up and find those bumper stickers that actually symbols say confused on them as well. But I wouldn't walk up to somebody and say, that's ridiculous. Because that's going to shut that door before it opens. You know, who knows? So we think about where to start. One of the things that I would strongly suggest with somebody that says, I'm an atheist, is listen to them. An opportunity for them to talk. Listen to them. Why they're an atheist. So often can be put in one of these categories, and maybe you can think of other ones as well. You'll see this said so many times. I believe in logic and science. And the mantra of the education system, the atheistic evolutionary elite, is that that's not where God is. And they believe this lie for so long, in generation after generation, that it's unquestioned. You might say, well, wouldn't it be logical to hear out the other side? You know, wouldn't it be logical to refuse to listen, would it? You know, you might have an open door. Another, and I would probably put most of the ammunition that those who do not believe in God have in their arsenal is because of some bad experience with organized religion, with hypocrisy. You know, people that have got common sense from childhood know when somebody's pulling their chain. You know, a few years back, it was a great travesty that St. Patrick's Day was going to fall on Lent. And it's like, so do we eat corned beef hash on the day we can't eat meat? And it's like, there was a call-in radio show, folks talking about this kind of thing. Got to talk about something on the radio, I guess. And one guy put it in a nutshell. He says, look, they're man-made rules on a man-made religion, and I'm not one of those men. And he's right. Every bit of it. There's more ammunition that has been given fodder to hit from hypocrisy. A dear friend of mine, his children were the same age as ours, and we wound up in the same circles an awful lot of time, from swimming lessons to soccer to, you know, all those little things. And you wind up sitting in chairs next to people. And we got to be very close friends. Our wives worked together for a while. One time, sit there, said to me one time, says, I'm an atheist. Says, I don't believe in God. I said, why was that? He says, well, as a kid, my dad was an alcoholic, an abusive alcoholic. And he made me go to church when he was drunk on the couch at home. And that's his reasoning why Jim says he's an atheist. And if that's all you got, you can understand where that is. It might be that they've never considered God. Talking about generationally, there are so many folks that are active atheists and trying to suppress any knowledge of God that they want to bring their children up in the nurture and admonition of no God. So there are generations never had it. They've been shielded from even the concept of God. And sometimes that is on purpose. There are folks that are inactive believers that can do the very same thing. Sherry got to come with me, and two out of three of our children. And the reason Sherry got to be here is because we've had two little foster girls living at our house for the last 6 months, and they actually went back to their mom. They were replaced in the home. That's a whole other story. But they've been with him, so she may not have been able to bring them and all that. But when they first came to our house, the little things had never heard about God. Their mom said in a meeting one time, "Oh yeah, they've been to they know some church songs, Feliz Navidad." She didn't even know what, you know, these little kids. Four and five, never heard about God, never bowed their head at a meal even to pray. They could tell you all about, you know, Dora or whoever, but nothing about God. A little story about that. The first Wednesday night, we got them on a Tuesday, and so Wednesday night, here we go off to Bible study. You know, they're coming too. And I pull out of the driveway singing, "Jesus Loves Me." First time they'd ever heard "Jesus Loves Me." Never heard it. Never heard about Jesus either. And when I got done, the five-year-old, you know, just stone quiet in the car while I'm singing "Jesus Loves Me." I'm doing a nice solo down the road. And she says, "Sing it again." And you can sing "Jesus Loves Me" seven times between our house and the church building. Just a side note, when the big folks get out of the way, children, and I'm telling this to the Saturday morning workshop crowd. When the big folks get out of the way, children have within them such a capacity and ability to love God and know about Him. And maybe the one thing that we sent away with them when they went back to the house, went back to their home, you know, They remind us, I mean, let's all sit down. We got to say the praise. they can grasp this concept. So it's the big people that can suppress it. And so often, it might just be the answer, if nothing else, but I never thought about it. May well be the reason for it. Several years back, Don Patton was doing an evolution seminar in Hamilton, Ontario. Steve Rudd had him come up, and it was rented a big, enormous lecture hall, you know, one of those way up in the nosebleed kind of things, out on McMaster University, right in Hamilton. And, as you know, presentation is just so powerful against evolution and using evolutionists' own words against them, just quote after quote, where these guys are admitting that they're making it up. They're admitting that they don't want to follow God, and so this is the alternative. And there was an intermission, and Steve went to the men's restroom down the hall, and there was one of the directors of the building that comes in there, you know, and there's Steve standing in the stall, and the guy starts just yelling and screaming at him, and he said, "You're going to make us lose our funding." Folks can hold to their atheism for a lot of reasons. But what do you see missing out of any of those reasons? one big obvious thing that's missing from all of those reasons why somebody might not be an atheist? Do any of them have to do with the actual existence of God? No, they don't. They don't have anything to do with whether there actually is God or not. It might be a reason that people hold, but that it's just not going to be. And that could very well be a start. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I got 15 minutes and I'm on the where to start part. The rest of this flies right on by. When we think about what do they believe, this is from American Atheist, atheist.org, the question, the definition of what an atheist is. Atheist and atheism and materialism, they just define it. You click on atheist.org. Who are we? Boom. This is what comes up. Atheism is defined as a mental attitude which unreservedly accepts the supremacy of reason and aims at establishing a lifestyle and ethical outlook verifiable by experience and scientific method, independent of all arbitrary assumptions of authority and creed. Now, one time teaching a teenage class, I brought a series of quotes where I said, if you listen to, it was especially about evolution, but I said, if you listen to them long enough, they will admit they're making it up as they go along. And so I would have them, I'd be reading along and I'd tell them, you know, make the brake sound. When you get to it, they admit they're making it up. Let's try that. Atheism may be defined as the mental attitude. What's the mental attitude? Give me a short, nice little five-letter word for that. Faith. This is what we believe. It is a faith. Never doubt that this is a faith that is held. This is what we believe. But see, they go to such great lengths to not say we don't believe in God. They say the mental attitude that it was independent of all arbitrary assumptions of authority. That's God and God's Word. It's like they try, you know, they're literate, but that's what they do. Okay, materialism declares, this is what we believe. That's what that says. Materialism declares that the cosmos is devoid of immanent conscious purpose. We don't believe in God. We don't believe God did it. It's governed by its own inherent, immutable, impersonal laws, that there is no supernatural interference in human life, that humankind, finding their resources within themselves, can and must create their own destiny. So many of these things, like several of those bumper stickers, signs that you see, you know, like the God signs that, you know, showed up, don't make me come down there, all those cute ones. Well, the atheist turned right around and put ones up that says, you can be good without God. There's city buses in London, England, big double-decker buses, and they say, God probably doesn't exist. So don't worry about it and have a good day. You know, the atheist.org. Like, there's a campaign to promote their faith. But that's what it is. Now, this is also one of those things that if you wanted to look at every facet of their categories of weak and strong atheists, there's a difference, they say, between saying, I don't believe in God, and saying, I know there is no God. They actually talk about different categories of themselves, that there are some that are active, others that are just, I don't want to fool with it. They kind of really lean toward the agnostic of, I don't really know, but I don't want to find out. Here's where I want us to focus. This is the workshop part. To teach Christ. To teach Christ to atheists, to teach Christ to your next door neighbor, to teach Christ to your children. We must hold fast what we have. Ask this question. What was the first thing that impressed or got the attention of the Philippian jailer? When you think about the jailer in Philippi, most likely a Roman thug, you know, to get that job, You're talking about a tough guy. Prisoner's already been beat, and he locks them in the inner prison. What are they doing? What are they doing? Singing. The only impression that he has of them is that here, these guys have had the worst day of anybody in town. And at midnight, they're still singing. The original Energizer Bunnies that you just can't quit. The earthquake and the place shakes apart, and he's ready to kill himself. And Paul shouts out to him, "Do yourself no harm, we're all here." What's his question back to Paul? "What must I do to be saved?" He saw those people, and at this point he had not been taught, because that's how it progresses. He takes them home and they teach him the gospel, that, and the conversion story, of course, unfolds, we're familiar with. But the first thing that he saw was people that were going to live it no matter what. That may be the first and maybe only impression that you have with somebody that is going to lend credibility. I heard it one time years ago, and it's just always stuck with me. When he says, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" He says, "How do I get what you've got?" And there's a motivation for us. As workshop participants, how do I make what I've got what everybody else wants? I have got to live it first. If I don't live it, I can't teach it. Turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. starting in verse 9, and this is talking to brethren, but look at how it, I want us to see how this all progresses. It's so much about how we ought to act, but there's a great big why that hangs over it at the end. It says, "But concerning brotherly love, you have no need that I should write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another, and indeed do so toward all the brethren who are in all of Macedonia. But we urge you, brethren, that you increase more and more, and that you also aspire to lead a quiet life, and to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands, as we commended you, that you may walk properly toward those who are outside, and that you may lack nothing." One time as a kid, we had a plumber come to the house, and Dad was talking to him outside, and something got mentioned that where we went to church. He stops and he says, "Is that where old Joe Harris goes to church?" "Yeah." And he said, "I used to work with that man at the shoe factory, and that's the foulest mouse guy I ever seen. If that's what Christianity is, I don't want anything to do with it." And it's like we can open doors and we can close them. Because whether anybody chooses to live the way we choose to or not, they know how we're they somehow, even the worst immoral people somehow know the standard that a Christian is supposed to live by. And we make sure that we don't squander that opportunity. One of the things that we look under this topic is that they may well try to shake our faith. Over in Timothy, he talks about, in 2 Timothy, the perilous times passage. And just look at the tail end of this. 2 Timothy chapter 3, when he's talking about all of the uns that are referred to there. Just start in verse 1. It says, "But know this, in the last days perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God." There's a big category, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Sometimes that can be folks that even admit they may believe in God, and by all practical purposes, if they don't want to listen to the authority and just want to go have a good time, they might as well be in this atheist category as well. It's the same difference. when he says, having a form of godliness but denying its power, and from such people turn away, look at what verse 6 says. For of this sort are those who creep into households and make captives of gullible women, loaded down with sins, led away by various lusts, always learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. There's a picture of all of those uns, all of that ugly stuff. That what happens is those that are in that will try their hardest to bring as many people to their side as possible. Sometimes there are people of different religions or whatever that may just kind of, they'll listen or not. Someone that's an active atheist, whether they listen to you or not, what they will turn around and try to do is cause you to doubt. That's really all they've got to do. Whether they are a firm believer in any tangent of atheism, if they can cause you to doubt, they feel like they've won the day. So the admonition is so important. We live by faith. We live actively as Christians, but expect that they're going to come up with something that tries to shake our faith as well. And, of course, it needs to be defended. Ready to give a defense to anyone that asks. And all the other fellows are going, oh, wait a minute, I got all these verses in my outline probably. So we're gonna scream right along. This is a quote from George Bernard Shaw, 1900 Victorian era playwright, contemporary of Darwin, very literate. Got a big thing up in Niagara on the Lake. Go watch the show. Was a stout, astute atheist until he just kind of denied it all. And that's what this quote is about. Look at all the things that are in this. It says, science to which I pinned my faith, he says it's faith. The science to which I pinned my faith is bankrupt. Its counsels, which should have established the millennium, led directly to the suicide of Europe. It says, I believed them once. In their name, I helped to destroy the faith of millions of worshipers in the temples of a thousand creeds. It says, and now they look at me and witness the great tragedy of an atheist who has lost his faith. And that's where we're all supposed to cheer and go, yay! But he actually admits what his life as an active atheist was about. This is a faith, and his goal was to try to shake those with a faith in God. Don't think that's not part of the agenda of a lot of folks in a lot of different ways that we will teach. When we talk about what do the scriptures say, a few other verses that kind of go with this, and this is where I'm just kind of stick these up here really quick. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, the Apostle Paul is chewing on these folks in Corinth for not getting along. And some comments that are made here, I want to see that just kind of jump out in the process of this. One of the reminders to these folks, because they were giving credence to people of an intellectual mind as if that's the ones that need kind of the chief seats. It's always been a battle of things that were going along. He says, where's the wise? Where's the scribe? Where's the disputer of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? This very picture that comes down through here. I'll just skip down to verse 26. He says, for you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise, according to the flesh, not many noble are called. He says, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise. So often, the competition is going to be there. Just like with regard to charitable things, Jesus said the poor will always be among you. Well, you know what? The disbelievers in God will always be among us as well. Paul's point was that preaching the gospel was in order to save some. And our goal is to preach Christ. And quite often the worst thing we can do is not do it. We see this in Romans chapter 1, the whole commentary really on the Roman world and how corrupt it came. The part of that that we see in talking about that they suppress the truth in unrighteousness. The evidence is around folks to look if they are willing to look. If they stop and if we can get people to quit listening to the noise that is around them, that is so often the picture that is there. The admonition that these folks have got a soul that's going to be lost. Well, everybody's got a soul that's going to be lost if they don't follow Christ. And ultimately, when we see this, that where we focus is on teaching Christ. We try to win a debate. Congratulations. There are some powerful things that we can use. There are things in our arsenal time after time. Folks think that the majority of scientists do not believe in God. There are organizations time after time, petitions that are signed of believing scientists. You turn to a book like Josh McDowell's Case for a Creator, and he talks about how one of the powerful things that was turning him against God was that how could there be a loving God when you've got a dying child? And then he actually stopped to think, well, what exactly does the atheist have to offer somebody at the bedside of a dying child? It's like all that emotion that what would people think would turn them against God. It's like, so exactly, why? How does that turn you to atheism? And if you want logic, you can make a faith in God far more logical than denying. But one of the things that we see, and this is my last thing before the trap door opens here, turn to Acts 17. Just quickly, just look at a couple of verses from Acts chapter 17. The Apostle Paul at Mars Hill in Athens, verse 17, it says, "Therefore he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and with the Gentile worshipers and in the marketplace daily and with those who happened to be there." I started to put this verse first. Who did he plan that day to talk to? Some who believed in God, and some who just happened along. In a pagan world, which is where we live, those who happen to be there might be, it could be any of these. And so this audience is diverse, and he is willing to talk to anybody. So we just see that's ready. That's that's preaching Christ without any other to anybody who happened to be there. Such a powerful opportunity. Verse 18, of course, we see it says, "And certain Epicurean Stoic philosophers encountered him, and some said, 'What does this babbler want to say?'" Now, you may have a footnote in your Bible over in the center margin that says, for that word babbler, it says seed picker. And the idea of a gleaner. What does this traveling bum have to say? So to start with, these Stoic and Epicurean philosophers, they're putting their shots in. Don't think that evangelism, that preaching Christ, doesn't come without the name calling and the belittling. And that's what it started with. And so when he says, "I became all things to all people," probably Paul walks into that audience and says, "Okay, today I'm a seed picker. But I'm still going to tell you." That he didn't get offended and turn away and say, "Well, you call me names. You don't need this." That's not where it stops. It says, "And he seems to be a proclaimer of foreign gods because he preached to them Jesus and the resurrection." Okay, whether he wins any other debate, and the point obviously of verses 19 to 31 is him talking about God who does not dwell in temples made his hands. It doesn't need anything as though he's of man's devising. One of the things that we try to get across to atheists or anyone else is that we don't play church. We're not making this up. This is not of man's devising. And to start with somebody that's an atheist, we may well have to instill in them the existence of God. Sooner or later, what we see is the Apostle Paul, in short order, preached Christ. to these people. Isn't that what we're putting together here? Verse 33, where it says, "So Paul departed from among them." And verse 33 could be where it ends, but instead it ends with verse 34 that says, well, getting ahead. Verse 32 up there, and says, "And when they heard of the resurrection of the dead, some mocked, while others said, 'We'll hear you again on this matter.'" You know, "Oh yeah, we'll keep this in mind." You know, bye. And it says, "And so he departed." But verse 34 says, "However, some men joined him and believed." Preaching Christ, whenever we have the chance, is a powerful opportunity. And may we thank the Lord for every opportunity and take advantage of it. And that's our lesson.